Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I do not consider myself a journalist. I work with journalists, people who take the reporting part of this seriously. I sort of live more in the entertainment realm. We do a show for fun, a place for fans to gather, and we have a conversation that's hopefully reflective of the conversation that fans are having other places where they're kind of getting together, at tailgates or lunch spots or back porches or whatever else. That's the kind of conversation that we're supposed to be having around here, just the sort of Georgia football fan conversation that hopefully you're having with your own friends there as well. Hopefully this, in many cases, sounds like that. However, I do think there is a role for reporting and kind of on-the-record stuff, and a lot of what you get from Georgia spring practice is, here's what I can verify, here's what I can confirm, and we love reading that. As Connor Riley and I kind of joked about a little bit on Tuesday, one of my favorite words is Georgia football practice report. When Dog Nation had a chance a couple of times already this spring to be on hand, eyewitness account of what's going on there for Georgia football. Of course, we love all of that. But because we're fans, we also understand this, that if the only way you're doing spring practice is the verified stuff that can be confirmed, I think we would say you're not exactly doing spring practice as well as it can be done. Because part of the fun of, for those of us who are college football obsessives and those of us who just sort of dive face first into the topic of college football, part of the fun is the stuff that can't be confirmed, the stuff that's sort of wild, unverifiable rumors. And if you're not sort of at least traversing some in the, hey, did you hear about so-and-so and did you hear about this? And half of it's right, maybe half of it's not. Some of it's just outright crazy. If you're not at least spending some of your time in some of that rumor mill stuff, then you're probably not doing college football spring practice as well as it could be done. Georgia, just like any other program, it relates to all of that. So that said, the most interesting rumor mill stuff that's been out there, I believe, for Georgia thus far this spring is the possible emergence of Colby Young, the recent transfer from Miami. And almost all of this is whisper. Almost all of this is rumor and innuendo. Almost all of this is, as I say from time to time, people who know somebody, who know somebody, who know somebody, who know somebody, who heard good things about what Young has supposedly done behind closed doors in the practices when the media hasn't been there, when, you know, most sort of, you know, high-level boosters or recruits haven't been there. Like, what's been going on for some of that? Apparently, we're led to believe that Colby Young has done pretty well. That wasn't necessarily confirmed this past, Tuesday, when Dog Nation was on hand for some of the practice. Our buddy Connor Riley, and I'll show you this on the screen, writing about the practice report that Young is still dealing with a little bit of an ankle injury, and he was lumbering through some drills there on Tuesday. So this is a situation where what we're seeing with our own eyes is a guy with a little bit of a bum ankle who's kind of lumbering through drills. But what we're hearing in the, hey, did you hear about so-and-so? What we're hearing in that situation is, oh my gosh, he's out there doing very, very big things, which is kind of fun and sort of what spring practice sort of is, as I said a moment ago. So what is the real story right now with Colby Young? Well, when Kirby Smart spoke the other day about transfer wide receivers in general, after now having seen them a little bit when he first kicked off spring, he's like, listen, I really hadn't seen these guys because I've been out and about doing all kinds of recruiting and whatnot. But now I sort of have seen some of these guys, and he kind of gave us a little bit of an idea of his early impression of the former Miami Hurricane, now at Georgia. This is what Kirby Smart said about that.
Colby's been a little banged up. He's had an ankle happened, I think, right before we started or right before we went on break. And so he's been able to practice some and do some things. He's actually gotten better with each practice, probably did the least any of his practices, the first practice, a little more the third practice, and then hoping today he's able to do some more. So he's very bright, transitioned smoothly.
So very bright, transitioned smoothly, and it's important to note that while Colby Young is new to Georgia, you know, this is not necessarily a Johnny-come-lately to college football overall. When you go back and look at the stats, and the stat that probably matters more to me than anything else when it comes to a receiver in a new place is, this guy catch touchdown passes. Well, last year for Miami on a team that wasn't very good, and like all Mario Cristobal teams, has a terrible offense, Colby Young had 5 touchdown catches, and that's more than everybody on the Georgia roster a year ago, other than Brock Bowers. And that's a Georgia team, by the way, that averaged 40 points per game. And yet still nobody other than Brock caught more touchdowns than Colby Young did last year for Miami. So it's not like Colby Young is, you know, an insignificant player in college football, statistically speaking, at least in that stat that really matters to me, did pretty well for Miami a year ago. And the fact that he's apparently already showing some of that in these sort of full padded practice that's taking place during spring practice, I think that's kind of fun. I think that's kind of exciting. So much so that on yesterday's show, and anytime we have questions about wide receiver, we always go straight to our buddy Terrence Edwards, who just, you know, knows all of this so well. And I asked Terrence, like, what do you make of the fact that right now, you know, Colby Young, the former Hurricane, is kind of been the sort of, in the rumor mill part of all of this, the sort of talk of spring practice here thus far? I thought Terrence gave a really interesting answer to that based on some research and some investigation that he's done on his own. Great stuff from Terrence.
Well, I spoke to his receiver coach down in Miami right when he transferred here to Georgia, and he had a lot of great things to say about the young man. And he was sad to see him leave. So I'm excited to see what he could do. I've also heard about his size, his ability. You've seen the stats floating around social media about his catch radius and his competitive catch rate. So I'm going to get opportunity to see him today. I'm going to head down to the clinic today and get down there early enough to sit in on the meetings and get opportunity to meet the young man and watch him up close. And I have a educated opinion on him from my opinion after today, and I hope to get to talk about it next week.
So let's tune in on Thursday to hear what Terrence Edwards has to say about that, getting a chance to watch practice as a part of that coaching clinic here this weekend. We'll certainly look forward to being able to do that. What I can tell you is I certainly hope all of this is true, because I do believe, because Young, you know, there's some dispute about how tall he really is. Miami lists him at 6'5", Georgia lists him at 6'3". You know, I think some of that stuff is probably, you know, just in the weeds a little bit. Tall is tall, and Colby Young is a tall receiver. And the ability to be tall, long body, wide catch radius is the kind of thing I believe that could have value for Georgia, you know, in the red zone, and give Georgia a chance to do something a little bit more of that I sort of think it needs to do. And as a way of sort of talking about what, you know, Colby Young might be able to be for Georgia here this year, you know, I want to talk a little bit about some of the stuff we kind of talked about in the past. What we've said before is that if you really look over the course of a period of years, Georgia has been as explosive of an offense as almost anybody else in college football. There are only two teams in America that have averaged at least 40 points per game in each of the last two seasons. One of those is who you'd expect, Lincoln Riley, Caleb Williams, and USC. The other is Georgia. So Georgia scores tons of points. That's not been an issue. But I do believe to prevent what happened for Georgia in 2023, doing something slightly different with the offense might be important. As we've said, you know, last year for a Georgia team that was scoring 40 points with regularity, when it really kind of came down to the most important game that Georgia played, only scored 24 against Alabama, did not score enough to beat the Crimson Tide there that day. And we think the absence of enough offense was probably the number one reason why that occurred. Also, maybe a little bit too deferential to Jalen Milroe. But even still, if Georgia had been able to put more pressure on Alabama offensively, that game could have gone far different. So what we said, and you've heard us say this before, is my ultimate wish list for Georgia here this season, for a team that has had no problem scoring 40 points, could they take the next step in terms of not just what the ceiling is, 40 or more, could they now work on the floor, work on the basement and say, this is a team that's going to score 30 at least in every game it plays in 2024. And listen, that is a very ambitious goal, as you've heard me perhaps say before. The greatest offensive team I've ever seen was 2019 LSU. They did not score 30 points in every single game. They only scored 23 in a road win at Auburn. So perhaps the notion of, you know, setting your sights on at least 30 points in every single game is just too ambitious, even for a team as successful as Georgia, because it proved to be too ambitious for maybe the greatest offensive team that we've seen. But in terms of establishing sort of a basement of offensive achievement that makes the sort of, you know, smaller point total against a team like Alabama less likely to occur in games that matter in 2024, this is where I think a guy like Colby Young could really, really pay dividends on that. Because while you don't want to, like, nitpick too much about what has overall been an incredible level of offensive success now for Georgia over the course of the last few seasons with a couple of different quarterbacks and a couple of different offensive coordinators, there is one way in which I think that Georgia could slightly redefine itself this year in 2024 that can make the offense even more bulletproof against the sort of bad game that ends your season, like what happened against Alabama. And I think that Colby Young could be a part of this. So Georgia last year was incredibly balanced in terms of its total number of passing attempts, its total number of rushing attempts. Georgia threw the ball last year 457 times. Georgia ran the ball last year 501 times. Very, very balanced in terms of the overall passing attempts compared to the overall rushing attempts. And Georgia last season was a very successful passing team overall. They were 11th in the country last season as a team. Obviously, most of this is Carson Beck. But they were 11th in the country last year with 4,274 yards through the air for the entirety of the season. So balanced among like passing attempts, rushing attempts, very successful overall in terms of passing yards. But what was interesting is the balance between pass and run kind of changes when you start looking at touchdowns. Georgia last year had more rushing touchdowns than anyone in America. They had 40, but they were only 11th in the country, or I should say 18th in the country last year in passing touchdowns overall, which is not necessarily a bad number. And you certainly don't complain about leading the country in rushing touchdowns. That's obviously a pretty cool thing to have as a part of your resume for the 2023 season. But what if this? What if a Georgia team that we expect to score about 40 points per game again this year, the same way that it has in recent years, what if it could find a little bit more balance about how it achieves those touchdowns? A team that throws the ball about as often as it runs it, and a team that last year threw it almost better than anybody else in America, what if it could get a little bit better at passing touchdowns? What if someone like Colby Young, who found five passing touchdowns a year ago, receiving touchdowns a year ago for a Miami team that could not throw the ball at all, what if he brings some of that to Georgia? And what if Georgia, who has been very balanced offensively, what if it can be a little bit more balanced about how it scores its touchdowns? A passing touchdown number that's a little closer to what it's doing when it comes to touchdowns on the ground. If that's the case for an offense that we expect to be stellar once again and expect to be scoring about 40 points per game, that may also be a good way to prevent the game in which you don't show up at your highest level and allow yourself to get beaten by a team in Alabama that in a game that I'm sure George would like to have back. So bottom line on all this is, how true is what we're hearing about Colby Young? We're going to find out for ourselves maybe a little bit on G-Day and as Young works his way to full health and as we perhaps get a chance to see a lot more of him here this fall. But if that could be true, if a red zone weapon like this could emerge, that could help Georgia in an area that I believe it needs a lot of help, creating the kind of balance in terms of how it scores to make Georgia being something close to a guarantee to get at least 30 every single game, and the sort of upset loss to a team like Alabama in the SEC championship, that could be a lot less likely to occur in 2024 if that is indeed the case. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Great to have you as a part of our program today, and great to have Kroger making it all possible. Of course, we're happy to have you joining us on video across all platforms, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all those there as well. X, I guess we're calling that now. Radio on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and our podcast platform. Post the show at dognation.com, clicking into the Apple Podcast Player, clicking into the Spotify Podcast Player, and whatever podcast player you may be using, I'm not even all that familiar with. Either way, we're just so happy and so thankful to have you checking in on our show today. We certainly appreciate all of that. And we appreciate our friends at Kroger making it all possible there as well. Getting excited, obviously, Palm Sunday coming up this weekend, and then looking ahead to Easter the following weekend. And so many of you thinking about Kroger as you get ready for all of that. So when it comes to the stuff that goes in the Easter basket, like the eggs and the like the little, what's the little like fake grass stuff, you know, that you put in the Easter baskets, all of that, the candy, you want the centerpiece, you know, ham for the meal that everybody's going to have together, or the decor, all of that. You're getting everything you need to get ready for a wonderful Easter with you, your friends, your family, and everyone you love right there at Kroger. I want you to check out Kroger.com/Easter for more on that. One more time, that's Kroger.com/Easter for more on that. You want great savings on the great things that make Easter such a special time of year. Kroger's got you on all of that. Make sure you check them out today. We're going to check out Jeff Sintel here coming up in just a moment. Some UGA recruiting talk with him. Also, the idea of rumors and things like that. There's certainly no shortage of those as it relates to UGA recruiting right now. What's true and what's not? We'll let Jeff Sintel tell us more about that here in just a little bit. Prior to that, I want to go around the doghouse, and it's poured today by our friends at the Finnish Laundering. And I will tell you this, yesterday I had to meet some folks. I was at a golf course, and I wasn't playing golf, although the weather was beautiful. I wish that I was. But I had some stuff I had to do, and I was at a golf course, and you see the cooler over there in the little clubhouse area, and sure enough, There's all that finished long drink that's in there. I'm telling you right now, there's nothing that goes better with golf than the finished long drink. It's amazing. Any golf course I ever go to, there's just finished long drink all over the place. And yesterday, there was no shortage of that there as well. So beautiful day. A lot of folks out there enjoying the links. Wish I was one of them and wish I was enjoying some finished long drink there as well, because that was great to see there yesterday. But on the topic of Georgia football, Kirby Smart was asked the other day, you know, inside linebacker at Georgia, a little bit of an interesting position group here this spring, because the key leader in that group, Smile Monin, is a little bit banged up here right now. And Jamon Dumas Johnson, who's been an important leader for Georgia, is now gone. He's on his way to Kentucky. So Kirby Smart was asked this week, well, in light of the Monin injury and the fact that JDJ is not here anymore, a lot of promising newcomers, because, you know, a couple of these guys played a good bit last year, but what are you kind of seeing from the inside linebacker spot here right now? A position, by the way, that's produced Butkus Award winners for Georgia a couple of different times in the Kirby Smart era. This is Kirby on that inside linebacker position.
Young. I mean, that's the first impression, is a lot of youth there, a lot of reps. If you, you know, the Raylan and CJ are way ahead in terms of play time that a second spring player, because this is their second spring, would normally be. In a perfect world, we'd like these guys to be coming into playing time. That's not the case. They got thrust into it and had to learn kind of trial by fire. So the guys behind them are even younger than them. There's not, you know, between Smile and the next guy, there's this big gap there. And I think part of that gap was created because the two young guys, you know, played well and were good last year. And if you're sitting behind that, sometimes you start questioning what you should do. And the guy that's had a good spring so far has been Bowles. He's done a good job, and he's picking things up. He didn't get the benefit from his high school not letting him go mid-year. He didn't get the benefit of coming in with those guys, but he's just as good an athlete as those guys, and he's going to help us special teams-wise. He's learning the defense. And then the other three guys that are here mid-year are providing good depth, and they're learning.
Nice video of Troy Bowles, for those of you watching on video there as well. We've had great video lately, including Bowles there. Now, I will say this. I like hearing about Troy Bowles, right? Because as Kirby kind of alludes to, for some reason, Troy Bowles is hard for me to say, but I like hearing about Bowles in that from that standpoint, because when you look back on class of 2023, Bowles was just as talked about as C.J. Allen, perhaps even more so, and probably just as talked about as Raylan Wilson, but we did hear more about both Wilson and Allen during the season last year than you heard about Troy Bowles. And one of the challenges we always have as Georgia fans, you know, I talked earlier about whisper campaign, what you're hearing. Sometimes as Georgia fans, we also have to wonder, what does it mean when we're not hearing anything? And sometimes no news is no big deal, and sometimes the absence of news is sort of the evidence of what's the old line about the absence of evidence, not the evidence of absence. Like, sometimes we don't really know what to make in a situation like this. But nice to hear Kirby Smart sort of touting Troy Bowles after being in the program for a year, kind of coming on there just a little bit. Obviously, the guy we love right now is C.J. Allen. That's one of those young players for Georgia that just sort of had the look of that future star, at least in my eyes, based on the way that he sort of played a year ago. And this is one of those things that sort of makes Georgia Georgia, in that I've talked before about the difference between, like, say, a premium position and a non-premium position. And if you look at the first round of the NFL draft, it gives you a pretty good idea of what the premium positions are. It's quarterback. These days it's wide receiver. It's offensive tackle. It's edge rusher. It's defensive line. These are sort of the kind of, you know, premium positions that typically are guys that are taken in the first round. And the positions that you know, are less premium, at least in my eye, are the positions that don't quite produce as many first-round picks on a regular basis. I just think that's sort of football 101 in some respects. And in one, you know, vein of looking at this, the inside linebacker spot might sort of seem like one of those non-premium positions, because you don't frequently see, first-round picks kind of come from the inside linebacker ranks, although you do certainly see some. Roquan was for Georgia. Devin White was for LSU. It can happen. Patrick Willis going back years ago, it can happen, but I would say that probably happens a little bit less frequently. However, at a place like Georgia, inside linebacker has been a very, very important position for UGA overall. Best defenses in this Smart era have had, as I mentioned, that sort of Butkus-level linebacker. Nakobe in 2021, Roquan in 2017, a team that broke through and made the college football playoff for the first time at Georgia in Kirby Smart's second year. They had the great inside linebacker. So Georgia may be a program where inside linebacker takes on extra value compared to where it does other places in college football, maybe even other places in the NFL, because of how important the inside linebacker spot has been to King Georgia's overall success. And what's interesting here is Kirby Smart talked about the potential emergence of Troy Bowles. Our eyes, as I said before, have been on C.J. Allen. But when ESPN the other day had a chance to tout a possible breakout player for Georgia, the name they gave was actually really pretty surprising. And I'm not saying this in a negative way. You know, maybe this is an example of either ESPN knowing something we don't, or perhaps ESPN not watching Georgia nearly as closely as we are. But when ESPN and its writer Mark Schlabaugh had a chance to tout a breakout guy for Georgia, it talked about another player in that inside linebacker spot, Raylan Wilson. Let me read to you what Mark Schlabaugh writes about Wilson. When he says that former starting linebacker Jamon Dumas Johnson transfers to Kentucky, the Bulldogs are looking for someone to start next to Smile Mondon in the middle of their defense. After a knee injury that he suffered in the preseason camp of 2023, sophomore Raylan Wilson showed flashes of why he was one of the most coveted linebacker prospects in the country as a senior at Lincoln High School in Tallahassee, obviously one of the best programs in America. Schlabaugh goes on to say, Wilson was named the SEC All-Freshman team after totaling 15 tackles and a half a sack in 12 games and one of the fastest runners in the state in the 100-meter dash. It was once clocked 24 miles per hour on the GPS. So ESPN, with its way too early top 25, looks at a breakout candidate for each of those teams. It's Raylan Wilson that got that nod. I think most fans probably have C.J. Allen probably ranked a little bit ahead of Wilson in their own personal pecking orders here right now. But I love the fact that ESPN is giving that, you know, buzz to Wilson, because it'd certainly be good to see him kind of take that next step there as well. Either way, in a place like Georgia, inside linebacker has taken on an extra level of importance compared to what it may have at other, even great programs, or even NFL, you know, organizations. Inside linebacker has just really mattered here. And Georgia has made its bones about having great ones. When Smile Mondon is really healthy, we think that he's obviously a great one. Who stands next to him and who has a chance to also etch their names in the history books the way the previous linebackers have? There is no shortage of candidates to perhaps join that list here in 2024. And that is Around the Doghouse, poured today by our friends at the Finish Long Drink. Told you yesterday, saw that Finish Long Drink sitting right there in that cooler. I always love those like refrigerator type things that have the glass door. You kind of look through there and you can sort of see. And the look when you just tell the can is just really, really cold. It sort of glistens in a different way. I love that so much. And when you try the Finish Long Drink, you can have the same experience, whether you're out playing golf or perhaps you're sort of sitting on a back patio with some friends or whatever it is that you're doing. This is a great time to enjoy the Finish Long Drink, the peach-flavored version, the peach state for a limited time, the Long Drink Cranberry, Long Drink Strong, 8.5% alcohol by volume, Long Drink Zero, no carbs, no sugar, or my favorite, after all these years, it's still the traditional, the blue can, the grapefruit flavor, the gin kick. I think some of that's just because I like the way the can looks. I just think the blue can looks good, but it also tastes really good for me there as well. I like the way the grapefruit flavor and the gin kind of spark just sort of mix well together. And that's what it is. It's a mixed drink in a can. It's a ready-to-drink cocktail. You like mixed drinks, but you don't want to mix it yourself. Well, let the Finish Long Drink mix it for you. They put it right there in the can for you. You can pop the top and enjoy it. Whatever you're doing here this weekend, the Finish Long Drink goes great with it. So find out where you can pick some up today. Check out thelongdrink.com. That's the website, thelongdrink.com. All right, before we're done, yesterday was a very bad day for one of the SEC's true blue blood programs. We'll talk more about why that is. But for now, on everything related to UGA recruiting, let's get the latest reports, rumors, and everything else in between. Let's talk to Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, here today.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Jeff Sintel joins us, and I was talking a moment ago about our friends at Kroger. Obviously, Kroger brings Jeff's Wednesday show Before the Hedges to us there as well. Now, some of that fake grass stuff that goes in the Easter basket. Jeff, you know what I'm talking about. It's like plastic or something like that. Every Easter basket ever has always got it. You got to buy it somewhere. My guess is, I've not been to the aisle and seen this myself. My guess is Kroger sells this. It's not like the Easter baskets come with the grass. I mean, you got to get it somewhere. I'm guessing Kroger probably sells that fake grass stuff, right?
Yeah, price points, man. Preloaded Easter baskets, I don't think so. Being a being an Easter parent for many, many years, you got to go coordinate that stuff. And
yeah, because if the basket doesn't have the fake grass in it, it's just a basket. Like, you could put biscuits in it. I mean, like, you know, to be an Easter basket, you got to have that sort of plasticky looking shredded, you know, grass-like substance. If it doesn't have that in it, it's actually not an Easter basket. That's just a fact.
Let me tell you a funny story. I'll tell myself a little bit on that subject. Growing up, I grew up in the obviously North Georgia mountains, and I had a relative. I can't place it right now, but this is when I was really young. They called that Easter grass foie grass, and I was like, "What? Like faux grass or something like that?" It was not much older in my life till I realized that that was not the correct term.
Okay, well there you go. You're also probably like me as well. It's like now everything is sort of like the plastic eggs and. People put like money in them or prizes. Like when I was a kid, we hunted real eggs that you boiled and you like did the dye and it stunk up the house because it was all like really like vinegary or whatever. Like we didn't do any of this like plastic stuff with prizes on the inside. We did real eggs. And if you stepped on them, it made a mess. I'm sure up there in Gilmer County, y'all were doing that as well.
Yeah, I had another relative. I had some funny relatives, I guess, looking back on it. Whenever somebody was lost direction-wise on vacation or we're going to go eat somewhere as a family, they would always say the term, you're as lost as last year's Easter egg there because that thing would get lost. And then, my man, it would be like you'd smell it before you found it because it was real eggs.
No,
maybe you got a green prize. Maybe you got like a gold prize egg with like a 50-cent piece or a Susan B. Anthony silver dollar in there. That's basically all we got.
No doubt. Well, you've already been a topic on this show this week, even though you're only now just making your appearance. A really interesting story with Julian Lewis's father the other day where Lewis is very candid. And Jeff, I want to be very clear about this. I think the Lewis camp has a right to be as, you know, they have a right to want what they want and to ask for and expect what they want. Everybody, this is free country. You can certainly be clear about what you want. And I think it's kind of cool that they're willing to be as forthright about this as they've been. But it is certainly eye-opening when Lewis's father tells you in a story that was at DogNation.com that we've already discussed this week that he doesn't think that Juju, even psychologically, would be able to sit as long as Carson Beck has waited, even though Beck has a chance to be the number one quarterback taken in the 2025 draft, and a highly touted prospect like Arch Manning is going to be at least 3 years before he becomes, or I guess 2 years, before he becomes the starting quarterback at Texas, that we're seeing top prospects wait, but it sounds like the Lewis camp, in terms of being a starting quarterback somewhere, sort of feels like they don't want to wait much more than a year to make that happen. Would be willing to wait a year, he told you, but perhaps not more than that. I'm not mad at them. I think that they have a right to want what they want, and I'm sure there's no shortage of teams that would be willing to acquiesce to whatever needs they have. It is just an interesting statement, a very candid statement from Lewis's father, sort of representing the Julian Juju Lewis camp. What did you make of all of that?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing, I guess I'll preface it by saying this. I think the path from where we're at right now, Brandon, to Julian Juju Lewis starting at Georgia would be the hardest, most hard to navigate, bumpiest path. And then he's such a great player. He understands the game. If he ever gets to that point where he's starting for Georgia, I think great things would happen. But I mean, really great things will happen. But it's just getting from now potentially to then, because there's going to be an understudy period. And I thought TC was very honest with it. I kind of laughed at this, Brandon. My wife was telling me a story about a movie. Now, there's a lot of Pixar and Disney movies out recently, and I try to catch most of them, especially when my kids were a little younger and they thought it was cool. But like, there's one out recently called Elemental that I heard her talking to my daughter about. And it's something about where like fire and ice or fire and water, it's a love story. Of course, it's a cartoon, but they fall in love, but then they decide, or it's just really hard for things to work out. And I don't really think that's exactly what the Julian Lewis situation is, but I think there's some elements to that, not to use a wordplay pun there, but like, I think it's probably honest for both sides to go in and go, you know, hey, this is what we're thinking. Because it's been talked about a lot. I sat on Before the Hedges this week, Brandon, that because everybody wants to know about the quarterbacks. I sat on Before the Hedges this week. If you gave me the field, which would be, I believe it to be Auburn, Alabama, and Georgia. And he's visiting Colorado this weekend, according to reports. But And then,
well, we know Deion's not visiting him based on what Deion said this week. If there's a visit taking place, it's player going to Deion because Deion ain't taking visits anywhere, apparently.
I wonder if Deion goes and hunts Easter eggs outside of his house.
I wonder. Something like he expects the Easter eggs to come to him.
Yeah. But I think if you had to tell me it's Southern Cal versus the field, I'm going to take the field. I think there's a feeling. I just get a sense that they want to stay closer to the South, that he doesn't really need to leave the South. And so then I think it becomes a fascinating question about, are they really a good fit? Because the football fit would be fine. But like I said earlier, getting to that point, I think it must be, you know, remember like old school, our younger viewers won't get this at all, Brandon, but like, remember how you're going somewhere and you used to print out MapQuest directions and it was like 2 pages. And like, that's how you got there. You had to set your odometer down to zero because you knew in 4.7 miles, you would need to make a right turn or whatever. So like, I feel like that's sort of what this is going to be. And man, I feel like from doing this a lot of years, Brandon, I think there's kind of a fatigue point with him in recruiting. He wants to be resolved. I know this is a new era, Brandon, but we've never seen a lot of 5 stars. Like the thought right now, if all trends is the way according right now, previously released plans, is that Juju will be taking three, four visits in like June. Man, I can't see that thing going that far. I really can't. I think it gets resolved quicker than that. I think the Matt Zollers stuff here is very interesting because I think Zollers is going to be ready to make his decision in about maybe like April the 7th, April the 5th. And then I think it's very interesting, kind of like a go time thing there where I think Georgia might have to make a decision. Now, there's, again, some things that I'm kind of painting this picture in the most pro-Georgia thing here, that it gets to the end of the day and like perhaps Julian Lewis and both Matt Zollers want to go play for Georgia, which is intriguing. But, you know, with all that being said, I think there's going to come a point where Zollers might actually force the dial, whether it's the hard choice or play the long game with Julian. I think Georgia can make it work in either direction. I think that's kind of just the most fascinating thing to look at here about, you know, what's going to happen here. Like one guy feels like he's really ready to make his decision. And I think the one unknown, and this is what I want to stress on this, is I think this would make a lot, this would come together a lot clearly if you could say Matt Zollers takes all of his 4 visits, Georgia actually gets the last one. I know that means a lot to a lot of people, and I think it means a lot to this one. If you could say Zollers at the end of his Georgia visit that says that's the best one, that's the best fit for me, I think then that is really interesting about what happens then with Julian versus Juju. But I want to say this to be really fair and balanced to all these quarterbacks, not just trying to be political because it's political season, Brandon. But Ryan Montgomery, man, there's something there that I think – whether he ends up being a starter 2 or 3 years down the road, or maybe he's a guy that helps Georgia win a big game because they need him. I think Ryan Montgomery, because Florida really wants him, South Carolina has told him that we won't offer and recruit another quarterback till you tell us what's up. I think Ryan Montgomery, there's a reason why Georgia, and this is kind of, you know, we laugh 4D underwater basket weaving chess that Kirby Smart plays, but they want him to take his official visit in the middle of June. And I don't think that's just a safety official visit. I think, and then the Julian Lewis camp, another thing that makes this very soap opera-ish is the Julian Lewis camp is looking really closely at Georgia in that April transfer portal part 2.
Yeah.
And they want to know what happens there. Do they bring in an understudy for Carson, or do they bring in a guy that will likely compete with Gunner and Puglisi and maybe even have an experience edge over those two for the Georgia QB1 job in 2025.
Well, let me ask you about another name, and you and I haven't really talked very much about him in this space, but I believe he visited Georgia this week, and that's Jared Curtis, the number one quarterback for the class of 2026. Is the Curtis stuff real or not that, or I should say, is the Curtis stuff real enough that it could also impact a decision that Georgia might make in 2025, that if you feel like you've got a inside track at a top quarterback for the class of 2026, that, you know, perhaps that would also sort of impact how you go about recruiting in 2025 there as well, and the level of promise or financial commitment even that you might be willing to make to Julian Juju Lewis.
Yeah, that's, you know, again, the financial thing is very interesting. We do have like multiple, you know, juggling balls here right now. I believe that there will be a number that potentially a Georgia fit there that they would have to agree with. That might be collective dollars, and that might be supplemented by potential NIL on the side. Or, like, you know, Julian's already got his own NIL right now. Very smooth operations in his circle. But I think Curtis, personally, Brendan, I think that's kind of softened a little bit. You see Georgia's offering and some other 2026 quarterbacks are coming in. I'll say this kind of flatly. If Julian comes to Georgia, I think that that would probably end Jaron Curtis's look at Georgia, because kind of like it was when Julian Lewis wasn't going to follow Raiola and Puglisi, especially, you know, a couple of years out. I don't think Curtis would follow Julian Lewis at the same stop. I just think that kind of backs up everything right there. And I think Georgia, I think at some point, we got to remember Zoller's, at least by one service on 3.com, has him now as a higher rated quarterback than Julian Juju Lewis.
Interesting.
One other thing that struck me, Brendan, from watching these quarterbacks a lot, is I just think at points it's going to be too much for Julian. Like, you hear, like, I saw him on a 707 day. It wasn't a very good day. Now, in all fairness, he came back the next day and almost looked like, you know, Doc Holliday at the river walking on water or whatever. But, like, or, you know, Kurt Russell's character Wyatt Earp walking on water in Tombstone. But, like, the day before, it was like he was playing a really good team. I think he had had Georgia visit on Thursday and Auburn visit on Friday. He'd barely, like, slept and ate, and he was with a team that was, you know, playing on a team that they weren't all on the same page. They brought in an offensive coordinator. They had, you know, new receivers, not really good timing there. There was an issue with, like, the depth of their routes and everything else like that. And he didn't really look confident. He didn't really look accurate. He didn't. And that's one of the benchmarks of his skill set, premium accuracy. And that's one of those things you see that I sit there and I go, I think to myself, I kind of read the green here and I go, is this thing really going to take until end of June, early July to resolve itself? I really don't think so.
Let me move on to a couple of other things, kind of rapid fire, because I know we talked a lot about David Sanders last week, but since we have talked, he's also kind of put out his official visit schedule. He's coming, I believe, the week after the Lewis visit that kind of kicks off the month of June and concludes the month of May. You got Sanders coming in after that. You and I talked a lot last week about the Georgia-Clemson battle there. We are certainly shaping up for another one of these June runs where all of the big official visits occur. So give me I know you've obviously wrote about Sanders this week too at DogNation.com. Give me a quick thought on that. And there's a couple of other issues I want to hit for you here today as well.
Yeah, sure. I think the national sentiment maybe behind the scenes is that Sanders really is looking at Georgia, Clemson, and Tennessee, and maybe somebody else can sneak in with a great official visit. I think, Brendan, that you kind of see pole position here. I'm going to speak to a little bit of your NASCAR roots a little bit here and just think about, like, the enviable one for Georgia. Like, look, that's where they put Julian Lewis, is the May 31st to June 2nd weekend. And that's when Clemson got David Sanders for that weekend, for their kind of Alpha Tiger weekend or whatever they call it, maybe Tiger Day or Tiger Paul weekend or something like that. Now, it's not an inescapable foregone conclusion. Now, folks won't remember this, but KJ Bolden didn't come to Georgia on that big opening salvo weekend a year ago. And he was at Clemson, and he actually ended up, we all know, committing to Florida State and then flipping to Georgia. So, you know, that's one thing that, you know, is it an end all be all? No, but I think Clemson got the weekend that Georgia really wants to have their priority guys in there for.
Then a quick thumbnail on this. You had a good story about Nathaniel Osowu-Boateng from IMG. I mentioned before, you got Curtis coming in. You know, visits are continuing for Georgia here right now, even though you just had the high-profile weekend that just occurred. How about a little bit of a thumbnail on that, about kind of, you know, sort of what's next in the visit front and how busy this month of March kind of remains for Georgia from a recruiting standpoint, with a lot of, you know, folks either having been to Georgia, making plans to be at Georgia, some of them making return visits to Georgia. It seems like this, you know, visit stuff is continuing here, including the young man from IMG that I mentioned a moment ago.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, Brendan. Right now I'm at the point where I know guys want to see Georgia, and do they decide to take one now or to come for G-Day, or do they want to come for their official? So, like, do they think they need to see Georgia two more times, maybe three more times? Like, Travis Smith Jr. is one of those guys. I think one of the visits we wrote about Nathaniel Osui-Boateng, and everybody calls him Woo. And, you know, this is an IMGA guy. IMG's the real name. I know it. But I just kind of, when Georgia really targets a guy at IMG, it really feels like it, that's a great fit for Georgia. Just the culture, like everything that Georgia's about, all business. You know, it's really, I always call IMG that experience like 13th grade football, because it's really like college already. That's why their players are so acclimated and ready to play, because they're on a college schedule basically the moment they're at IMG. And Nathan is just a tremendous player. Of course, he's a top five linebacker. Of course, Schumann only recruits the best, but, you know, he's got an older brother that is a Cleveland Brown, that the family's from Ghana, and he really didn't get football at all, but his older brother went on to be an All-American at Notre Dame and win the Butkus. And like, Nathaniel is already so much more advanced than him because he's at IMG. He's got his brother's experiences to stack up there. And you look at his film, Brandon, he plays like, I saw it and I thought of that line from Top Gun, like Mach 2 with his hair on fire. That's the way he plays linebacker. He's really smart. And then he's got an incredible why. I'd encourage people to check out that story. But another name I want to throw out here is Dijon Lee Jr. And he's a defensive back from Mission Viejo, California, another Cali dog potentially.
Yeah.
He visited Georgia. And like Nathaniel Osui-Boateng, man, here's what's happening. And this is a new little wrinkle. Is recruits come in and they want to stay for multiple days. Like they got multiple days. Both of those recruits did. And they saw Georgia practice on Thursday. They saw Georgia practice on Saturday. And they wanted to make sure they just didn't see, like, this is what it's called in the industry now, Brandon, like a lights, camera, action moment where the big recruit comes by and it feels like a Hollywood movie where everybody's waiting at the door. It's a great visit. All the babies are kissed. It feels a lot like glad handing. And then like they usher them off the door and then everybody starts being real and the real world happens. Well, that's what the recruits want to see now with Georgia. They want to see multiple practices because they go, good gosh, Amadi Joe Friday, did they really practice that hard? That might be the hardest practicing college football team they've ever seen. And then they're like, whoa, they're not going to come back the next day and do that. And then Georgia does that. That just gives them a really great, strong, genuine read on how things are. And if the coaches still show you love, if everybody still shows you love on day three that they did on day one, they're like, you know, words are great, but all these actions are better. And it really feels like Georgia wants me. And with Dijon, who's another big DB, he's a guy that Georgia has targeted. He's targeted Georgia. And now it really feels like, Brandon, even some of his comments coming out of his visit, you're hearing him say that, well, Georgia really set the bar really high. Now I'm going to see Alabama, other schools like that, to see if they can kind of measure up. And so Georgia is kind of the standard there in a big-time recruitment. He's a near five-star defensive back. So lots of stuff going on. And I think it's very interesting, Brandon. I think one of the things I try to do in our jobs here and my job here at Dog Nation is just to observe trends. This one kind of shocked me when I thought about it the other day. Do you realize that Georgia hasn't non-transfer portal, stuff like that, non-2024? Do you realize Georgia hasn't had a commitment in the 2025 class since going all the way back to Bo Walker in October?
Yeah, it's amazing. Long, long stretch of time here.
And I mean, we probably never put like this type of graphic up for on Before the Hedges like you do with your Gator Hater countdown. But man, that countdown is a little up there in how many days it's been since the dog's got a commitment. Now, it's not the true Georgia's had a drought, because remember, just back in the middle of December, Georgia had the big flip from KJ Bolden. They had other guys come in. They had guys come in through the transfer portal. But for this current class, Georgia hasn't had a commitment that long. And they've actually had a couple of decommitments. And the other way that I looked at it is like, you know what? There's not even a commitment right now for the 2026 class either. So that's a little bit different. I don't think Georgia is doing anything wrong. I don't think by any means that recruits are going stale on Georgia. I just think that Georgia has reached a point where they don't have to take these commitments really early. They can be very choosy. You know, Clemson waits until like October of a recruit's junior year or September now to give them their offer. Georgia might wait a little bit longer on their commitments. And, you know, a really good story, Brandon, that kind of went under the radar in the 2024 class. It's one of those things when I took a look at it and I was like, whoa, that's kind of shocking. Was this time a year ago, Brandon, can you believe this? Georgia had just offered Chris Cole And they had not yet offered Justin Williams until March the 30th.
Wow.
And they end up signing both of those guys, five-star, future five-star linebackers. Williams is already a linebacker. So everybody that's worried about, like, hey, getting laid or what's going on, two of the best linebackers in the country last year, Georgia had barely offered and started the recruiting relationship with those guys yet. And then quickly, once they saw Georgia, it was almost an instant connection.
All right, I wanted to be respectful of your time, but I do want to try to squeeze one more thing in there before we let you go. And this is kind of away from Georgia, but I do think it's going to eventually kind of relate to Georgia. The most talked about thing in college football this week may have been the Caden Proctor stuff, where after, you know, leaving Alabama to go to Iowa, after a spring break trip, changes his mind, comes back to Alabama. And I think this sort of raises some eyebrows about how wild this spring portal season could be coming up in a few weeks, which, by the way, is only 2 weeks long this year. We've also been on guard for craziness with the spring portal the last couple of years, and for the most part, it really hasn't materialized. But do you think the Proctor thing of going to Iowa, quickly changing your mind, coming back to Alabama, do you think this is a perhaps foreshadowing of the fact that there's going to be some really wild portal drama coming up in a few weeks?
Good question, Brandon. I thought it was going to be buck wild to begin with, but then recently, the NCAA basically saying no moss with Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran, like that really feels like nobody is going to have to worry about the NCAA stopping anything in terms of transfers, in terms of immediate eligibility because of threat of litigation and everything else like that. So when I saw that really kicked it up a little notch, another notch. You know, sometimes guys need to graduate. Sometimes other guys just need to see what the depth chart looks like at a lot of schools. Like, are those second year guys, does the light bulb really come on for them after their second or third spring? And if not, it's probably best for most parties to move on. I don't know if you saw this, Brandon, but there was the rumor mill churning out that not just Proctor, but potentially Caleb Downs might come back.
We talked about that. We talked about that.
That would just be tomfoolery, and that would be like off the chain. But here's what we did see, and this is the world we live in, Brandon. I don't know if you saw this either, but the Ohio State Collective basically made a statement. They pushed something out, some media with Caleb Downs being connected to the Ohio State Collective.
We talked about that as well, that the NIL Collective is the one that refuted the rumor. The rumor was big enough that it needed refuting. And it was the NIL organization that did it. Yeah, there you go on the screen right there. The Foundation, which is the most obnoxious name for something of all time. The Foundation confirming that Caleb Downs remains a student-athlete partner. Very interesting times we live in indeed.
Yeah, let me take that bravado another step further. The Foundation also classified him as the student-athlete representative. Did you see that?
I did say that. Well, guess what? This fall, he's going to play on the most overrated team in college football as well. So there you go.
And you've got the Ohio State University. And really, they're just branding and it's message like, hey, let's do some counter-programming propaganda here. And it's going to be crazy. I don't know, Brendan, is there going to be a moment does Nick Saban come back? Like, what else could shock us? You know what I mean? What else could shock us now in terms of what could happen now with player eligibility and whatever? I mean, I do know this. I know I don't see a lot of movement for the Dogs, at least bringing guys in. There's always we just spoke about it earlier in the show. It's the backup quarterback. Are they going to get an experienced guy that's been a number two for somewhere, like a former five-star lurking somewhere? Maybe that's what happens, but I think time will tell.
Jeff, great stuff. Hope you enjoy your weekend. And thanks for being here and giving us this recruiting information on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. We're going to look forward to doing it with you again very soon as well.
Easter grass, man. I never thought we'd talk about that, buddy. Take it easy, man.
I love it. Good to see you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Unexpected conversations like that, one of the things that make our Dog Nation cruise so much fun. Jeff's going to be there. And I'm telling you, if you're there, you know, Jeff will tell you some stuff about recruiting that you don't often get, you know, just in a conversation like this. You know, some things that can't be written, things that can't be told, or things that can be told now because of whatever else. Jeff's really good about providing a lot of that kind of stuff on the Dog Nation cruise. That's one of the reasons why we're looking forward to seeing hundreds of you on board Allure of the Seas. I just got a message about Allure of the Seas in my email here this week. That's always a fun thing. And it's a reminder to me that it's about time to go cruising with Royal Caribbean. And of course, with that in mind, we'll go cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean here right now there as well. And I tell you what, look at that video of Allure of the Seas. And one of the things I love about Allure of the Seas, an Oasis class ship, right there on the back of the ship, it's that It's the Aqua Theater, right? Because one of the things that Royal Caribbean, I think, really does, really better than anybody, it's the entertainment options they put on board. They want the cruise experience to be defined by the fun things you're doing while on board, great shows, and the high diving show that takes place, like, while you're on the ship is moving, these people are jumping 40, 50 feet in the air is what it looks like. To think that's happening while the ship is moving is just amazing. It's just an example of a lot of the great entertainment options that they offer, including like the Flow Rider there too, for those of you. The one guy that's doing it there, if you're watching a video, he's standing up on the surf simulator. I can't do that on the Flow Rider. I can kind of do like that one guy is there sort of, you know, laying down on my stomach. I almost can get up to my knees, but I've never been able to stand up on one of those Flow Riders. So credit to those who can on that. Many of you probably could do that. Either way, when you see a video like this, just a reminder of how much fun we're going to have on board Allure of the Seas here coming up in really just a few weeks' time. And a reminder to you that if you can't be on the Dog Nation cruise, next best thing is to take your own Royal Caribbean cruise vacation. Jessica Slater can help you out with that. Give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com, about the Boardwalk neighborhood there and the carousel off in the distance. Give you an idea about how big and expansive these ships are. In one of those neighborhoods, the Boardwalk, you've got a carousel, working carousel on board the ship. Just an amazing thing. So Jessica Slater's a great travel agent. She can make the Royal Caribbean cruise vacation for you even better by helping you plan that, all of the options. So make sure you check her out today and check out all the really cool stuff that Royal Caribbean has going on. Obviously, our Golden Shoe Bracket Contest is off and running. That's been really fun. Last night, March Madness, I think, really delivered. And the most talked about moments, obviously, another loss for Kentucky against a double-digit seed. And I think at this point in time, you just got to get rid of John Calipari. Listen, it's sort of old-school sports talk to kind of sit here behind a microphone and say, you got to fire the coach. How do you possibly bring back John Calipari after year and year and year of just the same kind of stuff? And they haven't been to the Final Four in 2015. This is Kentucky basketball, the ultimate blue blood program. And with a lot of future NBA stars, they just don't win anything. And listen, I know for a lot of you, a lot of these Kentucky fans, the most obnoxious people in the world, I totally understand that. But there is still a degree to which I almost kind of feel sorry for Kentucky fans a little bit, because I would imagine that being a Kentucky basketball fan is one of the least satisfying experiences in the world. Because, like I said before, you do it in recruiting. These guys go on to star in the NBA. But Calipari's just not coaching them up in college. He's just not. And I think one of the things it speaks to is there's a weird divide among Kentucky fans in that, like, the it's been kind of explained to me before, like, the sort of blue blood, like, very, you know, old money, you know, well-heeled Kentucky fans, these are the folks that are going to the games at Rupp Arena. These are the sort of the older folks that are sort of sitting there, and they're seeing Kentucky win these home games in the regular season. So a lot of them don't really see the problem, because the games they attend, Kentucky's doing fine in. When you talk about, like, taking over what they used to call Catlanta, people traveling for the SEC tournament or going to the NCAA tournament, a lot of these are sort of the younger, kind of new money, you know, sort of less sophisticated fans who can't get into Rupp Arena, so therefore they spend big bucks to follow the team on the road. And these are what I would call sort of the real fans. And the real fans who want to see Kentucky advance in March, they're just not seeing it all. They're not seeing it occur. And I know Kentucky's going to try to upgrade its NIL and stuff like that, but my gosh, this is really a travesty for a program like Kentucky to be embarrassed against double-digit seeds over and over and over again. I don't know how you could look Kentucky fans in the eye and say, we're bringing this guy back when he keeps replicating the same disappointing experience. So tough day to be a Kentucky fan, I think. I saw a note at 24/7 Sports the other day where it looks like, in line with the new SEC scheduling format taking place at ESPN, that the league and ESPN, according to a couple of the reporters from 24/7 Sports, are considering some new start times for games. This isn't like a wild change necessarily, but instead of starting at noon, they're going to start at 12:45. And instead of starting at like 3:30, they're going to start at like 4:15 and like 7:45. This is, like I said, it's not a huge change, but it is a slight change from what we're kind of used to. And we've been kind of wondering, now that the SEC doesn't have CBS as a partner, and now that ESPN has total control of the entirety of the inventory, what will they choose to do with it? Perhaps a slightly different start time could be on the way for that. And to me, what this sort of speaks to is, I'm not trying to be overly negative here, but like the real, you know, I think revelation, the real clever idea that made a big impact was Fox's creation of the Big Noon Saturday. They saw a hole in the market of big games taking place at noon. They said, we can step in and fill this hole, and we can get good TV ratings for that. And to Fox's credit, to the Big Ten's credit, they've kind of succeeded in doing that. By comparison, I think ESPN is still waiting for its first good idea. They haven't had a lot of good ideas as it relates to college football in quite some time. I think the SEC is in a little bit of a good idea drought here right now there as well. And unfortunately, I don't think moving your start times back 45 minutes probably is going to resonate quite the same way. It's not a given they will do this, but there's been some reporting out there about that. Speaking of good reporting, I thought Ross Dellinger had an interesting piece up at Yahoo.com about what's next for the ACC as it relates to the possible disillusion of the league after the Florida State and the Clemson lawsuit. And there are two things that Dellinger brings up that I think are really important to consider here. Thing number one is this. A lot of SEC fans, including Georgia fans, sort of assume that the moment the ACC breaks up, the SEC will be there to scoop up a lot of those sort of SEC, like the ACC teams are somewhat similar to the SEC, like Florida State and Clemson, teams that have had success, teams that play in, you know, kind of a football hotbed. But as Dellinger points out, this is really important to understand, it is not obvious that that's going to be the case, because in the case of Florida State and in the case of Clemson, the SEC is already in those states. And here's the weird deal that the SEC might find itself, where you don't necessarily want Clemson and Florida State to go to the Big Ten, because that gives the Big Ten another footprint growth, and now they're kind of encroaching on your turf here in the South. But at the same time, you can't get ESPN to pay you more money for a ninth conference game. There is a very good chance the SEC cannot get additional money for bringing in Clemson and Florida State because of the belief that ESPN might have that it doesn't necessarily bring additional viewers because you're not expanding the footprint of the ACC. So it's worth watching of, well, if Clemson and Florida State can break away from the ACC, where would they go? It is not obvious that it would be to the SEC because all of this, to a degree, is about money. And it's not a sure thing that the SEC could make more money as a league with Florida State and Clemson as a part of this. That's why, as Dellinger reports at Yahoo, the real team to watch here may be North Carolina, because there is additional value to the SEC bringing in North Carolina, because it is a state the SEC is currently not located in. It is the thing that Sankey talks about all the time, a contiguous state. It's a state that touches another SEC state, and it's also a relatively populous state. North Carolina is certainly a heritage athletic department, if not always great in football, but they're also as tied to the ACC as anybody. So Carolina Blue may be something worth paying attention to. Does the ACC have a future? The team and the organization that sort of run that league forever, North Carolina, may be the program that ultimately has the number one say in that. And then I'll just briefly mention this. Greg Suggs, the newly hired Michigan defensive line coach who got arrested on suspicion of DUI the other day, has now stepped down from his position. This has been a wild offseason thus far in the Big Ten when it comes to assistant coaches. Michigan, upon hiring Sharon Moore, has essentially replaced his entire staff. Ohio State just lost its running backs coach because he went to Michigan, and now Michigan's got an assistant coach stepping down on suspicion of DUI. Very, very strange year, off season for the Big Ten when it comes to position coaches, and obviously bad timing for Michigan to be looking for a defensive line coach after what appears to be a pretty big mistake being made by one of his assistant coaches there. So a note worth pointing out there will make that cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And as we wrap up here on a Friday, let's do so with a couple of golden shoes, as you might imagine. Some of these making fun of me, including our buddy Mike the Mad Dog. You know, yesterday, I feel like I sound better today than I did yesterday. He says, it sounds like Dog Nation Daily was a bit stuffy this morning. Too bad Mucinex isn't a sponsor of Dog Nation Daily. He gives sort of a funny look of what it might be like if Mucinex, and the Mucinex, is that a mascot for Mucinex, on the set there with me. Here's what I'm going to tell you. I don't know that I took Mucinex, but I have taken more drugs this morning than I ever have. I am hopped up and sort of medicated somewhere between Barry Bonds in 2001 and Jimi Hendrix in 1969 right now. So I wanted to sound hopefully a little bit better on the show today, and I used whatever pharmaceutical aid I could do to make that happen. So hopefully that's been a little bit better. Funny stuff from Mad Dog as per usual. Golden Shoe also going out making fun of the Kentucky loss here a little bit. Remember the NFL season when it began with Aaron Rodgers running out with the American flag? A lot of fanfare for his first game with the Jets. And then, unfortunately for Aaron, he tore his Achilles. Well, Kim Lewis writes in to say this is like Kentucky's March Madness run. Kim, very funny stuff. We'll give her a golden shoe for that. Speaking of making fun of Kentucky, that will continue there as well. Kaylee Manziel sent this to us from another account on X of beating Oakland isn't for everybody. Georgia did this, going back a while ago, 81-69, a little while ago here. But obviously Kentucky not able to do that last night against Oakland, so we'll laugh at their expense. Kaylee sharing that with us. And then one more golden shoe to give you there as well. The other day we were talking about a commenter who was saying he couldn't comment. This is on our video portion of our show because he was driving, and I said, hey, keep your hands at 10-2. Well, George on Tap, one of our frequent contributors to our golden shoe, said with airbags now, they've changed the old wisdom about 10-2. The National Highway Safety Traffic Administration, which I'm sure those are party people, says that now instead of 10-2, you should hold your hands at 9-3. Gene Moody responded to that by saying, I think that's just for daylight savings time, which is a very funny line, I believe. So we'll give Gene and Georgia on Tap a golden shoe for all of that. Lousy, stinking Gators, no matter what time it is there, we know they've got very little in the way of success to enjoy. In fact, it's been 1,230 days since the Florida Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. That's fun to consider. It's also fun to consider this. If I'm doing the math correctly, that means next week we get a chance to enjoy 1, 2, 3, 4 in terms of our Gator Hater Updater for 1,234 will be next week at some point in time. So that'll be good stuff there. Y'all have a great weekend. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. We'll look forward to seeing you Monday, everybody.